Hello there and welcome to the A to D talk show, where we talk about controversial issues and deliberate on them. We believe that the world is like a coin and it is best to see both sides of it. So come on, join us as we agree to disagree.
Welcome everyone back to A to D, Agree to Disagree, season 2, episode 1. Today we'll be talking about free speech versus hate speech, the meaning or the narrative. In a rapidly changing and political conscious world, the demand for respect for human rights comes to the fore. These issues of human rights explores contemporary issues of which freedom of speech is key. This freedom plays a vital role in the promotion and maintenance of our democracy. However, it's a sensitive one, as controversies arise over what should be considered as a dimension to this freedom. So today we would have a special guest, Esmeralda, who is a lawyer and a friend of mine. We are going to be talking intricately about what is truly the difference between free speech and hate speech. When does speech become hateful, and when, to what extent can we tolerate free speech? So thank you once again, Esmeralda, for being here. And I would start by asking one or two questions. So the first question that is going to be very fundamental and foundational to building our premise on free speech and hate speech is, what is free speech? What do you consider as free speech? And what do you consider as hate speech?
Thank you very much, Kelechi. So, right, free speech is basically the right to say whatever you feel like saying. Yeah. Right? It is an unconstrained right to speak freely, objectively, like reasonably, the right to hold opinions, basically. While there's no generally accepted definition of hate speech, right, but the United Nations have viewed hate speech in various ways. They said that hate speech is a kind of communication or behavior that attacks or discriminates against people based on religion, ethnicity, gender, or any group whatsoever with the aim to, like, attack you or cause pain or some sort of damage to you.
So with this very precise definition, when you speak on hate speech based on it being discriminative in nature, is there a line where can we draw a line between when something is discriminative or when something is actually factual? So what I'm trying to say is this: if there is a statistics, or there is statistics that show that in America, for example, that black males in America, this is from FBI study 2016, black males in America are responsible for 50% of violent crime. Now, if I come out to say that there is a high chance of you being killed by a black man in America, is that considered as hate speech? Or is that considered as free speech, which stems from facts and proven statistics?
Thank you very much, Kelechi. You see, the problem with hate speech is that there is actually no definition. There is no line for you to say. In fact, even the United Nations, they don't define hate speech. They prefer to just pick up incitement. They call it incitement to hate speech, right? And sometimes people say things like hate speech is not free speech, be careful not to say, like, all of those kind of quotes, right?
Yeah.
But the truth is that that is not a correct thing to say. Because first of all, there is no law that defines hate speech. That's number one. Mm. Number two, for all the categories of laws that we have in Nigeria that have attempted to categorize hate speech in quotes, there is no clear-cut definition. Like to say, this thing you're saying here is hate speech. Like to say, oh, calling somebody black or a nigger is hate speech. Do you understand?
Yeah.
If you go somewhere, that may be hate speech. To say, oh, you're a nigger. But yeah. Assuming you and your guy in Nigeria now, you put a high-five and you say, ah, nigga, what's up? You understand?
Yeah.
It's not hate speech here. So there's no line per se. And that's what all of these bills that they are propagating are trying to do, trying to say, oh, when you do this, it's hate speech.
Yeah.
But I'm of the opinion that to create something like that, to say that a speech is particular speech is hateful, it's quite a stretch. What you should actually consider is the context. Like, in what circumstance are you calling a black person a criminal from the illustration that you've given, right? What has led to that? Do you understand? If, for instance, now you're in an environment where black people are always involved in criminal activities and you want to make reference to that, like something that can be seen, something that is obvious, right? It's different from you just going to, walking up to a peaceful black person and saying, oh, you're a criminal.
Yeah.
With or without color, you'd feel some kind of way, right?
I did a bit of study looking from the US Constitution, and you made mention of the social media bill that they're trying to pass in Nigeria. That's just very ludicrous. But when I look at the United States Constitution, especially the First Amendment, because, and the reason I use the United States Constitution as an example in this case is because the Nigerian Constitution tries to mirror the United States Constitution, but somehow just removes some very important things. Now, when I look at what we consider as free speech in the Constitution, when you look at Section 9 and Section 38, right, to freedom of thought and conscience and religion, and Section 39 that speaks of freedom of expression. And in the Constitution, it's not really detailed. They didn't go down into the intricacies. Now, but when I look at the First Amendment in the United States Constitution, and you have freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and you see that it says the Supreme Court requires the government to provide substantial justification for the interference with the right of free speech. Where is the attempt to when there is an attempt to regulate the content of the speech? So what this actually says is, okay, now, because I want to draw the conversation down to the meaning and the narrative. Now, you have rightly said that there is no pure defined meaning of hate speech. And you have said also that there is a defining of free speech. And while I will not support the fact that someone can go to an individual and say you're a criminal, but in what then would you say of situations where people who come out to say, okay, there are radical Muslims who have been involved in terrorist organizations or terrorist activities. But when someone comes, when does that expression of thoughts become hate speech? Or what meaning can you draw from a statement saying radical Muslims have ended up becoming mostly involved in terrorist activities? What meaning do you put in this question and in this particular statement? And what narrative do you think you expect from the ordinary person or the person in the society?
Okay. So let me just address the part where I talked about free speech in Nigeria. In Nigeria, free speech is protected under Section 39 of the Constitution. And one of the perks of our law is that it's not just the Constitution that you look at when you're considering an item. There are plenty other laws that you can look at, like the Criminal Code or the Penal Code, depending on where you are. So the right to free speech is also guaranteed under the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights Instruments, which Nigeria has adopted, ratified as well. And while I understand your arguments to say there is no limit to free speech, I think Section 39 sub 3 of the Constitution actually limits free speech. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of permits some laws that says that there are circumstances where your free speech are not reasonably justified. For instance, Section 59 of the Criminal Code, it provides for when somebody publishes a rumor or report which is likely to cause fear or alarm to the public or to disturb the peace of the public.
Yeah.
And regardless that the person believes that this statement is true, remember that when we talk about free speech, we're not asking that you should be reasonable in your speech. No. We're not asking that you should be objective. We're just saying that you have the right to say whatever you want to say. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
So if I think that radicals are extremists, right? And I say radicals are extremists, it's part of my free speech. It's part of what I'm entitled to say. Because the law doesn't say, oh, you must say something sensible and objective. Or if you're saying something, you should say it with facts. No, that's not what the law says. The law says that you have the right to say what you are saying. In fact, there's this very beautiful quote from Thomas Jefferson that I like about free speech. He said, as long as we may think as we will and speak as we think, the condition of man will proceed in improvement. When Thomas Jefferson made this statement, he assumed that human beings were rational. He trusted that we, as human beings, will be able to make decisions, that we'll be able to interact freely without judgment. For instance, now if I see you, Kelechi, I'm not looking at a radical or an extremist. That's not what I'm thinking. I'm just looking at you as a human being. That's what Thomas Jefferson assumed. But you see that our reality is very different. That is not what it is. First of all, you have to consider that the level of education of people differ. But even with uneducated people, they have their rights. That right exists for them. Even with extremely educated people, that right exists for them. So it's like looking at six from opposite angles. You may see nine, I may see six, but I'm entitled to what I'm saying. There's nothing saying that, oh, I must be objective, I must back it up with facts or any of those. So that is what free speech is about, honestly.
Yeah. Thank you. You made very apt points when we were speaking about the limits of free speech. And I just want to add a bit of context to it for people who are listening and for people who will be listening on the podcast. So while the United States Constitution says, government cannot obstruct speech, they also said that they are unprotected and less protected categories of speech. Now, when you talk about, like you rightly said, advocacy of illegal actions, and I mean, fighting words, and of what they call obscenity. So while people have the right to think as they like, speak as they like, there are limits to what you can say. When it comes to when you're advocating for illegal actions, like for example, I think yesterday or the day before yesterday, a particular person tweeted that he was going to behead Dr. Fauci. He was censored. Where you see a lot of quote that talks about killing people or death threats, those things are usually censored, and it is those speech are not protected by the First Amendment. Yeah, we look at fighting words like nigger, those words have been censored in the United States. Like you said, yeah, in Nigeria, it may not be much of a problem, but in the United States, is different. Now, just to put a bit of context to that. Now, I also want to ask you a question as regards to when people begin to add meaning, or when people begin to add spin the narrative of a particular conversation or a particular statement into hate speech. Because what we have been talking about is the law. Now let's come to the reality of things. And we know that at the end of the day, people don't go around carrying the law in their head. People just believe they have free speech. But again, you see a lot of times when people just put the blanket of what you just said is hate speech. So how do you think that people can, or how do you think the law can, in a better way, enforce the First Amendment or the freedom of speech by not pushing or through the media, pushing the narrative that, okay, this is hate speech. How can we contain free speech, whatever you say, and people saying, oh, this you have said, it's hate speech. Now, let me just give an example so you get the context of my question. Now, there are places where in America, or not places in America, there are places where if you see someone who is physically and biologically a woman, and you call that person a woman, it is considered in some states as hate speech, that you just assumed that person is a woman, when we are in a time of gender fluidity. So how can we control the meaning of what people are saying and the media trying to always spin the narrative in order to make it either free speech or hate speech?
Okay, thank you, Kelechi. But let me begin by saying that every country is sovereign enough to make its own laws and its own rules, right? So the same way that Nigeria can make its own laws, America has made its own laws, yeah? So it's not as though the constitution or the laws in Nigeria did not foresee that there might be excesses. Like I mentioned earlier, I mentioned Section 59 of the Criminal Code, and it covers criminal defamation. Section 391 to 395 of the Penal Code also covers criminal defamation. You also have the Cybercrime Act 2015 in Nigeria, Section 24. It criminalizes the bullying, harassment, and threats of harm to a person, property, or their reputation. In fact, some people would argue that these penalties are too stiff because they go up to as much as 10 years imprisonment and fines up to 25 million naira, right?
Yeah.
And also, like I said, right, in the examples that you gave, walking up to a woman and saying, oh, I think you're a woman, and the person is offended. I had earlier said that there's no generally accepted definition of hate speech. However, there is a baseline, right? There is something that you can consider and say, this is hate speech. And I'd like to adopt the United Nations position on that, because Nigeria doesn't have its own definition yet. But all over the world, we agree that hate speech is a kind of communication, a kind of speech, or even writing, or even a behavior that attacks or uses discriminatory language with reference to a person or a group on the basis of religion, ethnicity, nationality, race, color, descent, or gender. So if I walk up to somebody and say, hey, I think you're a woman, and the person says, this is hate speech, I can easily say this is just a mistake. And in Nigerian laws, mistake or justification is a defense to defamation. Do you understand?
Yeah.
So all over the world, people recognize mistake also as a defense to defamation. But if I'm saying you are a woman, am I intending to hurt you, like emotionally, physically? Except you can show that, oh, when I said that, I meant harm for you. I wanted to injure you in some way, maybe injure your reputation. Like, you know how in Nigeria, people will see men going and say, this is a woman rapper, that kind of thing. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Yes, that is stuff that you can now argue and say, this person intended.
I lost you for a moment.
Okay, Brett, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, yes. So that's basically the distinction that I wanted to make. And in fact, when you talk about the United States and the world over, they don't talk about hate speech per se, because even in the United States, there's no court that has ruled on the definition of hate speech. But what they attack instead is the incitement to discrimination. Do you understand? Like, if you're being picked as one person, I think late last year, there was somebody who went and shot some people and all of that. And in his defense, when he got to court, he was saying that, oh, he read materials from the internet. And that was why he thought that that was right, right? And the judge looked at it and said, well, this is a plausible argument. So the world over, they don't categorize and say this is hate speech, because it's really going to be difficult if you want to draw a line and say this you should not say and this you should say. Meanwhile, we've heard and we know like that free speech encourages communication, and there's always progress when there's that.
Okay, thank you very much, Esmeralda. So I just want to ask, can you just give an eccentric view of this whole social media bill that's going on in Nigeria? So let's bring this back home. So there was an NSAS protest that happened that Nigerians retweeted against police brutality. And the protest went on for a week or two. And this protest was so organized. People who were lawyers went to bail out people who were arrested in the protest. Medical personnel were there and all sort of utilities. And after the protests, or after the massacre that happened in Lekki massacre and the shootings of peaceful protesters, now they are moving to create a social media bill that would, I believe, that will censor our ability to express ourselves on the internet. So can you go a little bit?
Trump said he wanted a landslide at 306.
Sorry. Can you please mute?
To that point, remember.
Sorry for that. So can you just go deep into what the social media bill means? How does the constitution allow this to happen? Where is in our constitution where it's allowed for people for Congress, or I say Congress, I'm so used to the United States, the Senate, to put a censorship on the way we use social media in this country?
Well, that's one way to look at it. One way to actually look at it and say the constitution is allowing people to censor social media. But I think what basically is happening is that the members in the Senate, they are performing their functions as provided by Section 4 of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. As you well know, the Senate is responsible for making laws in Nigeria. So if they are trying to make a social media bill, it's because they think, which is rather unfortunate, they think that there is need to regulate the social media space. Nigeria will not be the first country to regulate or attempt to regulate the social media space. In fact, we have countries like Germany, Korea, those places where social media is regulated. In fact, we have some African countries that have experienced internet shutdowns sponsored by the government, like a lot of all of those. But so the Nigerian Senate is currently considering two bills relating to freedom of expression online. One, in fact, one of such bills proposed the death penalty for hate speech. The other one proposes a national commission for hate speech, and the other one is protection from internet falsehood and manipulation and other related offenses. So the two bills that are being sponsored, they tend to give the government authority arbitrary powers to shut down the internet and limit access to social media.
Let me just interrupt you there for a minute. So are there laws in the Constitution that somehow precludes the Senate from passing this bill?
If you could be more clear, do you mean, is there something that can stop this bill from being passed into law?
So yes, exactly. Are there things in the Constitution that precludes the Senate from passing this into law?
There are different stages to drafting a bill and eventually passing them. There's the first reading, first and second reading, then there's the public hearing. So usually if Nigerians are very determined and they come up and say, we really don't want this bill to pass at the public hearing, and you can read the wordings of the people, and a lot of Nigerians oppose. In fact, you can go so far to collect signatures to say, no, we don't want this social media bill. Right, the bill will definitely not be passed. If the bill gets to the president and he looks at it and say, oh, I don't want this bill, he will not sign on it and the bill will not be passed.
My question is, should we even, I mean, is because the reason I'm asking this question, and the reason I'm going to ask more questions than this is, should there even be a discussion in the first place? This is outside the fact that we can, after public hearing, we have the right to do petitions. Outside the fact that the president can be like, no, that this is not good, we're not going to pass this bill. Outside the whole bureaucracy that happens after this bill or when this bill wants to be passed. My question is there no bills or are there no laws in the Constitution that precludes them to even start? Because the reason I'm saying this is, when I look at the United States Constitution, there are things that you can't even do. There are things you can't even think of passing in the first place. Because one thing about the Constitution is, the United States Constitution is, it gives the government limited power. So, for example, you would see that when you look at, even when we spoke about the unprotected and less protected categories of speech, you see that even for under the advocacy of illegal action, you see, in order to punish the speaker, that is someone who is speaking for an advocacy of illegal action, the speech is first directed to inciting or producing imminent lawless action. So, I mean, even under the whole unprotected speech, there is a bit of limit to what the government can do in prosecuting that person. Like you rightly said, someone went to go and shoot some people and came out to say, in his defense, that he read something online. So my question is, are there things in the question that even precludes this from happening in the first place? And if not, don't you think this is a sad situation?
Well, Kelechi, outside of the constitutional checks and balances that are contained in the Constitution, I don't think that you're looking at the American laws correctly if you're saying that there is a law that expressly stops them from discussing whether there is need to advance in their democracy or to talk about certain issues. I don't believe that's correct.
No. So it's more like an impudence. So it is unequivocally stated things. For example, when I was preparing for the whole show, right, and I saw the disparities, so you could see how unequivocal they are. Yes, definitely the constitution is always going to be amended. Definitely there are checks and balances, right? But when you see the United States Constitution and the how explicit it is in stating its laws and the limits to what the government can do, I don't see the same thing in the American Constitution, in the Nigerian Constitution. Hence, they are thinking of passing a social media bill, which I believe in the first place shouldn't even be happening. So maybe you can enlighten me better based on what you know.
Well, Kelechi, I actually agree with you that the social media bill should not even be a conversation to have. But if you're talking about the wordings and phrasing of a constitution, that's a function of the draftsmen, the people who drafted the Nigerian constitution. And of course, they'll definitely be different from those who drafted the American constitution. And if you're saying, well, they didn't do such a good work, they were not explicit enough, they were not direct enough, that is why there's opportunity to always improve on the constitution. There's opportunity to always make laws, and that is what democracy is about. Democracy is about change. It's about talking to people, giving people the opportunity to discuss and say, well, look, we've gone past this, right? And then democracy is about also saying, let's do things the right way. Let's discuss. The majority agree for this bill to go on. And that's why all of those public hearings and all come into play. If you understand what I mean.
Yes, I do.
So, yes, the Constitution of Nigeria could have been drafted better. It could have. But that does not limit the extent to which... It's like saying that, assuming it was not the social media bill, it's like saying that the recent sexual harassment bill that was passed against sexual harassment in institutions, it's like saying, should there not be a law or something that stops that kind of conversation? Because when you speak to your the ASUU people on the side of ASUU, they tell you that, oh, the universities are independent. They have their own acts and they have provisions for this, right? But the law still came past, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, yes, I do.
So if there was something that could gag us from having this conversation, you would see how limited it would be. Would not be able to talk about sexual harassment in universities, for instance, or in 2018 when the Federal Consumer Competition Protection Bill came into pass and all of that. So to say that let there be some conversations that should never be had is quite a stretch, if you'd ask me. And it represents the exact ideals that we do not want in democracy. In fact, that is exactly what the social media bill is about. Well, what I'm saying here is that, well, we can petition this. We can go for the public hearings and say, we don't want this. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. And like the NSAS protesters, we can also say, we're protesting against this because it's our right to do that. It's part of what we have as a nation to be able to fight against the public view. In fact, you can go so far to say, did my senator, the senator representing my constituency, did he support this bill? If he did, let's recall him because he does not represent our interests. You understand? In fact, I learned that in Lagos, I think a House of Assembly member is currently being recalled.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that's a method. Assuming now, you know, all of these bills have to be sponsored. So somebody sponsored one of these bills. Assuming the person was from my place and I decided, I was like, well, this does not represent my position as in Nigerian, I don't want the social media bill. And I'm a card, and I have my voter's card, and I voted in 2019, I voted the senator. I'm just going to start a petition, like, let's recall him. You don't represent my interest any longer. That's why democracy is so beautiful, because today, if it is not the social media bill, it will be something in your interest. Do you understand? So if we put a gag on democracy because we think that some topics should be untouchable, unquestionable, we'd see that we'll be doing ourselves a disservice. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So thank you, Esmeralda, for clearing that up But do you think that we should trust the government? I mean, this I may be digressing a little bit. Do you think we should trust the government when it comes to petitions against this bill? Do you think that if people come together and petition against this bill, that the government will hear us out? And the reason I ask this question is, now there are a lot of conversations going around saying that police is going to prevent protests from happening in Lagos. I think in Zimbabwe, I'm not sure they made protests illegal. And yes, we're in a democracy. I mean, and democracy is one of the best things that happened to Nigeria. But my concern as an individual is, do you think we can trust the government enough? Because even till today, there are accounts of the ENSA protesters that they froze them even before courts gave an order. There have been, some of them have been put on no flight list. So, I mean, there are a lot of things that have happened without due process. So do you think we can trust the government? Because I think the reason I'm concerned, or the reason why people will be concerned about social media bill, is because of trust. Do you think we can trust the government enough to say, if this goes to public hearing and people come and say, you know what, let's raise petition against this particular bill, and we're able to aggrandize a lot of people to raise petition against that particular bill, do you think that we would somehow have our way?
Frankly, I know that a lot of Nigerians don't trust the government, and rightly so. The reason being that the government has so far shown that it is not trustworthy. First of all, especially with the trend that happened, and I'm just saying this because it's the most recent off the top of my head, with the ENSAs, when the government came out to say, oh, we're going to disband the SARS, they said the same thing in 2015, said the same thing in 2016, 2017, 2018, and in 2020, we still have people protesting because of the NSAS movement. And it shows that, well, if you were not committed in 2015, you were not committed in 2016, why do you want us to believe that you'd be committed in 2020? It's a right way to feel. But if you're asking whether I think that a petition or a recall can work to stop the social media bill, I think it's different from relying on the government. Because, like I'll mention again, the work of checks and balances. Mm-hmm. So the passing of a bill is not a function of the executive. You understand? We have three arms of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judiciary. The legislative is saddled with the responsibility of making laws for Nigeria. And that law has sufficiently provided and say, see, if these people are doing things that don't represent you, you can call them back. Do you understand? So we're not writing a petition saying, oh, Nigerian government, please help us. Do you understand? We're saying, you that is sponsoring this bill, what you are doing does not represent our interests. Please come back home. And in fact, I believe that if as young people, as Nigerians, if we are really serious, I think this is something that can work. In fact, one of my regrets about the ENSAS protest was that, so we all came out for the ENSAS protest in large numbers. Some of us even voted like during the election, right? If we had foresight, we should have taken signatures to actually recall some of our members and say, you people are not doing that. And it would have been so easy, because you just stand there and say, please, can you sign this? We want to recall the member representing this constituency. By then, they'll not be thinking about how to shut us down in social media. They'll be worrying about how to remain in the seat. And of course, they'll do what we want them to do. Unfortunately, none of us had that foresight. It's not an opportunity that has passed us yet. So if you're asking me whether we can stop the social media bill from being a bill, from being an act, I think we can. In fact, this is not the first time that this proposition is being made. I think sometime in 2015, they attempted to do the same thing, and it just didn't work. So even if it looks like the people don't have a lot of power now, I think that people actually do. It's stressful. It's not supposed to be that way. True, it's time consuming, true. And we're losing a lot of lives, and it's really not supposed to be that way.
True.
But we are not without power. We are not without the ability to say no when we say no. And no matter how you look at this ENSAS movement, no matter how you look at it, whether you look at it and look back with regret, I think that was a big statement.
Me too. I believe so.
That showed the power of the people. It showed that people could and actually took their rights. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Esmeralda. Does any of us have a question we need to ask? We can put it up in the chat box because we'll soon be rounding up. So, just as we are about rounding up, do you think is there anything else you would like to say that during the course of our conversation I didn't point to?
Okay, I think the only thing that is left for me to say is that although some have claimed that regulating hate speech would prevent violence and degradation of individuals or groups, others are also of the opinion that if we focus on chaining hate speech, putting it in the reins, there are people who have legitimate reasons to disagree. And those legitimate reasons can bring up improvements in a way that we don't anticipate. So if we suppress these legitimate reasons, we now open the door for governments to suppress us. So governments will not allow any form of opposition because you've given them the power. So to me, the most effective way to counter any potential negative effect of hate speech is to create more speech. For instance, if you tell me, you're a man, as I am now, you say you're a man, and I can say, why do you think I'm a man? What futures give me off as a man, right?
Yeah.
So by the time we begin to talk and we discuss and you see that, well, your idea does not make sense, you now understand that, well. So for instance, there are places like in Germany, they have hate laws. Those laws have been passed. And those laws were passed because of the Nazi. You know about Germany and Nazi? Yeah. It has not eliminated Nazism at all. In fact, they do it with their body language. They do it with the way they look at you. They are not holding any placards. They are not wearing any insignia. They are not. But if you see a Nazi, you know. So to me, words only have the power when we believe them and act upon them. It's my advice. It's frankly my position that we should learn the skill of taking words just as they are. They are just words. If you don't act upon them, they are nothing more than that, words. So instead of looking for how to do hate speech, let's create more speech. Yeah.
So, okay, I have to ask you this question. So when you say more speech, do you mean more free speech or more categories of speech?
I'm not sure what categories of speech.
So when you say you need to create more speech, so when you say more speech, do you mean in the actual act of talking while expressing your free speech? Or do you mean...
Yes, I mean, like, we should encourage conversation. Okay. We should encourage people to talk to one another. You should not look upon it as everybody's trying to insult you. Because sometimes somebody is even asking a genuine question. You just look at it and say, oh, this is hate speech. This person is trying to insult me.
Yeah.
And all of that, yeah.
Okay, thank you very much once again, Esmeralda. And, okay, someone has a question. Let's just read this and know what he's saying. there has the JKM is asking, there has been a lot of online petitions, but are they actually effective? This is sort of the concerns I raised, because I've seen a lot of petitions that they said, oh, UK should, and people and British citizens should sign petitions against the Nigerian government and all that. I mean, during the NSTAR protest, maybe you also realized it. We signed a lot of petitions, visa ban petition, a lot of petitions against the Nigerian government. And I don't know if these petitions are going to work, but in my opinion, I haven't seen any effect to it. So Ejikeme is asking, there have been a lot of online petitions, but are they actually effective? Can the personalization media bill be stopped at this point? I know you have touched on this already, but just can you just throw more light to
the Ejikeme? Okay, on the issue of petitions, right? I think that all of these online petitions that we sign, we basically sign them because we want to get the attention of the outside world. There's a Nigerian way of doing this. It's still olden. It's still archaic. You have to like actually sign with your signature. You have to attach some documents to show that you're petitioning somebody. It's not this online things that we're doing. These online things, when we sign, maybe somebody will say, oh, I've written a petition, and if I can get 1,000 signatures, America will look into it. But like I said earlier, Nigeria is a sovereign country.
True.
America is a sovereign country. So there's so much America can do for Nigeria. They cannot come in and descend into the country and say, you go like this. Instead, you're making life kind of difficult for yourself because they would not place sanctions on Nigeria. So if you were selling bags, maybe from the UK to Nigeria, and they place sanctions on Nigeria and say, well, Nigeria, because you're not doing this NSAS people's demand, the price of your pound as against our Naira is going to drop.
Yeah.
You see, it affects us as Nigerians. It's good because sometimes we get the opportunity where issues concerning Nigeria are discussed on the floor of all of these places. But I think the most important form of petition should be the traditional one, the one provided for by the Nigerian constitution and the laws governing our own people.
So can you just tell us, can you just explain what section of the constitution talks about petition? Just for educational purposes, is this something you can... What section of the constitution talks about petition? So we can, I mean, people who are listening now and people who are going to listen to the podcast can be able to go and look at it. So the next time they want to raise petitions and next time they want to recall or whatever it is, people are going to be, these people are going to understand where to go and how to approach such petitions. Just.
Okay, so there are different kinds of petitions. There are petitions against marriage. There are election petitions.
Petitions against marriage?
You understand? Yeah. If I wanted the divorce, I'll petition my husband.
And how many people should sign that?
No, that's just the name of the process that you serve.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's also election petition. But if you're talking about... a signature to recall your senator. It's a petition, but it's not captioned as a petition in the constitution, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I mean?
I understand. So what I'm thinking about right now is, so where can we find this archaic? Where can we find this archaic process? I mean, where can we find it so we know how to follow the due process when we need to call people?
Okay. For instance, now, there are three stages of recalling a senator.
Yeah.
If you, that's the question you're asking me, right?
Yes, that's the question.
Okay, so if you wanted to recall your senator, like how those people in Lagos are, you start with the chairman of the INEC, right? You have at least one half of the persons who register to vote in that senator's constituency. So assuming I'm the senator and 500 people voted for me, I have to submit a petition of 250 people.
That so voted my for you?
Yes, to become a senator.
Wow. Wow.
So I'll carry my book and biro and go to the area. Where are you from, Kelechi?
I'm from Anambra State.
Okay, so I'll go to Anambra, maybe Anambra South. Or is that how you call your
constituency? Orumba South, Orumba North. Just go to Orumba South.
Orumba South, exactly. I'll go to Orumba South. I'll say, okay, Kelechi, number one signature. Ejikeme, number two signature. Esmeralda, number three, you sign.
So what you're going to... So the question... Do you have the list of people? Do you have access to the list of people that voted for that senator? So therefore, you can now.
Yes, you do.
So they will give you the list of people that they give the list of.
You can apply to the INEC to get it. It's not a difficult process.
Okay.
And in fact, after all of that signing, the second stage is the verification. Because if you remember, there was one time they wanted to recall Dino Melaye.
Yeah.
And he now said there were dead people who allegedly had signed. So how did he know that there were dead people? It's because of the second stage of recall. You notify the senator. INEC will tell the senator that, look, your people want you back home. Your people are saying that you don't represent what they want. So the INEC will now also issue a public notice with the date, time, and location for the verification. So all of you people will come.
Uh-huh.
So look at the verification, like the...
So you have to be there physically... Voters.
Not everybody, but like a good number should be there so that you can look and say, okay, number one is Kelechi. Is Kelechi a registered voter in Orumba North? Then you look at it, right? Then after that, INEC will write to the petitioners that, okay, the requirements, the minimum requirement for a referendum has been achieved. As mean, they now discover that up to half of the people who signed the petition are members of that zone, and yes, they were.
Why does this sound stressful?
Like I said, the Nigerian method is still archaic and stressful. So then after that, there will be a referendum. So if the minimum requirements for the referendum are met, the INEC would have to conduct that within 90 days of receiving the petition. Then the referendum is just simply yes or no. The INEC will ask you, do you people want the senator to come back home? You say, yes, we want him to come back home. And if most people vote yes, they'll issue a certificate of recall to the senator, and that's all. The senator will go back home. You people will vote a new person to represent him.
So I don't know how, I don't know this. This sounds like an esoteric understand of the constitution. I don't know how I don't know this, but
you're supposed to employ lawyer so that will chop your money.
Okay, so as well, the way
in section 69 and section 110 of the constitution,
can you just say that again?
Republic of Nigeria,
section what?
It's actually in section 69,
okay,
and section 110 of the Constitution of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, 1999, as amended.
Okay, that sounds very lawyer-ish. I don't know. So as well, when this, I don't know, this conversation is, I mean, we are derailing, but we have a conversation, we have a topic we are going to talk about, and let me just invite you now for it. We want to speak intricately about the 99 Constitution. So do you accept or reject? Let me have your record.
Well, it depends on the day.
Okay. I would speak. We'll speak more about that. So the question I want to ask is, when this senator is recalled, is there an automatic replacement, or do people have to go and vote again for another senator, or is there another?
Of course, you have to vote again. You're in a democracy.
Okay, so I just thought maybe it goes to the next person, maybe that's the second runner-up. Maybe it goes to the runner-up during the election or something.
You do know that elections in Nigeria are party-based, right?
Yeah, true.
So would you give to the next person on the list of the party, or would you give to the next party?
Oh, okay, I get you. Yeah. So let's just round this up. So thank you very much once again, Esmeralda, for speaking on free speech and hate speech. And those at home who are listening from the podcast, you can always reach out to us to ask more questions based on this topic, if you can make it here. And we would be very, very happy to answer your questions. And once again, remember, this is A to D, where we agree to disagree. We're not yet to convince you to pick sides, but we show you, we allow you to be free in your thinking and in your speaking. So once again, thank you very much, Esmeralda, and do have a wonderful day. And thank you all for listening, and do have a wonderful day. Bye.